for the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. The biggest thing on the, and I mean big, not only in terms of its box office draw on the silver screen, but it's a big movie. It's 3 hours and 20 minutes long. It's the latest in the Rings trilogy from Tolkien. I understand, according to a little scuttlebutt at the radio station here today, that the director and producer of this movie will also later, sometime later, be producing the first in the stories that led to the Lord of the Rings trilogy from Tolkien. He'll be producing as a film The Hobbit as well. But for today, it's opening on big screens everywhere around the world. It's a great story. There's no doubt about it. It's an epic story. It's the kind of thing that will probably go down in history as one of the great stories of the 20th century, from the pen of J.R.R. Tolkien brought to the big screen. We'll get what the story is as we start our conversation with Dr. Gene Edward Veith. But more importantly, can the viewer of these films find a Christian worldview, a genuinely Christian worldview in the Ring trilogy? Can they find Christian symbolism in these movies as well? Dr. Gene Edward Veith is professor of English and director of the Cronach Institute at Concordia University in Mequon, Wisconsin. He is, of course, culture editor for World Magazine, and he's author of several books, including his latest, Loving God with All Your Mind. Dr. Veith, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
Ed, would you run us through the story of the Rings trilogy? It's a huge story, but would you give us the bare outlines?
Well, if I can. It sets up a peaceful kind of world, a peaceful civilization that becomes under attack by forces of darkness, by pure evil that wants to destroy it. And the success of it, one way or another, hinges on this ring. This is a ring that was created by the Dark Lord, Sauron, which has great power. And this ring has been lost for hundreds of years, but it was found and it made its way to the little weak little people called the Hobbits. And they don't even know what it is, but when they find out what it is, Sauron wants to get his hands on it, so he sends dark riders and all kinds of things looking for it. And it falls to a little hobbit called Frodo, who's the ring bearer. And the elves and men and dwarfs, all of the civilized people, conclude that this must be destroyed, and the only way to destroy it is to throw it into Mount Doom, the volcano that it came from, which is right in the heart of the Dark Lord's territory. So the movie is about the adventures of this company of people on the way to destroy the ring. And the problem is that the ring really symbolizes evil, and it's corrupting. People who have the ring develop a desire for it, and it starts to change and corrupt people, and people will do terrible things to try to get the ring. And so in this Hobbit Frodo and his friends, they have to deal with those kinds of temptations and problems as well. In the meantime, face all kinds of armies and good and evil and vast epic adventures on the way to try to get rid of that ring.
Ed, I remember when I first read this book, these books, I was probably 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept reading them. Actually, there's a period of about 10 years where I read these books back to back over and over and over again because the story was compelling.
Yeah.
I had no idea reading as a child that what I was also reading was the mindset, the worldview of a not only a profound writer, but also of a Christian man, J.R.R. Tolkien.
That's right.
I didn't see it, now I do. Where will the casual observer of these movies first and foremost see a Christian worldview? Then we can get on into some specifics about Christian symbolism.
Well, to me, the whole business of the ring, now this is a battle of good and evil, like a lot of stories are. One of the differences is this shows what is good about good and what is evil about evil. They're not just symbolic. There's a lot of qualities that come out and support a very strong moral view. But what makes it especially Christian is the insight that the battle between good and evil is something that happens inside the heart. It's not just good guys and bad guys. This ring is something that even good people, you know, the side on the good side, can be corrupted by and twisted and distorted. And that's a great insight about the nature of sin. Frodo is bearing that sin, to trying to get rid of it in a way that, you know, recalls what Christ, you know, Christ is the sin bearer, and the patterns of sacrifice, the patterns of death and resurrection, the way that the weak end up being more significant than the strong, all of these things just resonate so much from a biblical way of looking at life.
Now, the latest of the films is this really monumental film that's coming out today, mm-hmm. The Return of the King,
yeah.
is said not only by those who have previewed it to be the best of the three,
yeah.
it's also the longest, but it is also the one that, in the kind of the climax of the story, delivers for the Christian observer the greatest import, the kind of greatest Christ figure
yeah.
of the many that are in these films and these books. Tell us about the latest of this, tell us about the story of the climax here, The Return of the King.
Well, at the very end is a vast battle. The forces of darkness and the forces of Middle Earth are in for a titanic battle. But there's been a prophecy that the king will return. The thing is, the Middle Earth, the human beings who are facing this terrible evil, they have lost their spirit. They've lost their confidence. Their civilization is in decline. Suddenly they're having to face this monumental assault. But there's a prophecy that the king will return, that the king from the golden era will come back, and that he will bring victory to the people. And of course, that's so powerful for Christians. I mean, this is Advent. What we're looking forward to is the return of the king to deal with all of the things and sins and problems and crises that we have to face. That's what Advent is all about. Only that he's the real king that one day is going to return. But this movie, you know, touches all of those chords, all of those kinds of longings and those kinds of assumptions, and it just brings them to the fore in what I hear is going to be a very powerful way.
At the same time, you know, someone listening to this might say, well, you know, I understand this is supposed to be, these are supposed to be good stories. Are they simply Christian allegory?
Well, no, and Tolkien didn't like allegories, unlike his friend Lewis, who wrote wonderful allegories in The Chronicles of Narnia. By the way, it was Tolkien who's witnessing to C.S. Lewis about who Christ was, really was one of the turning points to bring C.S. Lewis to faith. So Tolkien is a very strong Christian, and he talked about this. He was trying to tell a story. He had this idea of subcreation, the idea that, of course, God created the real universe, but human beings, having been made in his image before that image was faced by sin, that we can be creative too. And he was interested in the idea of just by the imagination, you know, creating a kind of world, which of course doesn't compare at all to the reality of the world that God made. And so he was telling a story that it was meaningful to him. He wasn't intentionally symbolizing things, although he talks about how this is a Christian work, but it's a Christian work because it was made from a Christian imagination. In other words, his mind, his feelings, his sensibility, you know, worked in these ways and resonated with a great Christian story. And so this work contains that. And it's not a symbolism. I mean, it's not an allegory. It's not just an attempt to put Christian ideas in symbolic terms. And yet, when you immerse yourself into this universe that he makes up with his imagination, you see that it's really there.
The amazing thing about the films so far as I've seen them is that they've been remarkably faithful to the books, although you know, some adaptation has to be made for the sake of the films. But it's a little bit like, if you understand my meaning here, walking through a church, a quiet church, and looking at the sun shining through stained glass windows. You don't necessarily get the Christian message in the proper order. But you get a resurrection. You get a theology of the cross. You get the sacrifice. You get these kind of things kind of all coming at you depending on which direction you're looking in the story.
That's a really good way to put it.
There's a scene that most people have observed which is closest to the resurrection of Christ in this, and it is the return of the wizard Gandalf after he is supposedly defeated and killed in a battle with a giant demon underground. Tell us about that.
Well, in the scene, Gandalf is this titanic struggle with this Balrog, this demon. This is deep under the earth. And in order to save the company, to let them escape, he does battle with this creature who in that he falls down into the fiery depths in the center of the earth. And, you know, no one can survive that. And then it turns out in the next book, in the Two Towers, or in the next movie, that Gandalf has come back, been battling with that demonic figure, that symbol of evil. He defeated it, and he rose. And now he's not Gandalf the Grey, he's Gandalf the White. And this resurrected Gandalf is far more powerful than what he was before. And again, it's just a direct image of, or symbol of, Christ, his battle with Satan, Christ's seeming defeat on the cross, his descent into hell, and then his glorious resurrection with the devil completely defeated.
Someone might say, in a general sense, Ed, I understand these are great stories, but how can they be a Christian work if you read carefully these books? This is a Middle Earth that has no God. It has things that could be compared to gods, but it has no God explicitly recognized.
Well, Tolkien, out of his kind of devout concerns, did not want to create a religion as such for Middle Earth, because that would be a pagan religion, and he didn't want anything to confuse with the true religion that he held. In this universe that he's made, when you read the Silmarillion that gives all the background information, it is a created world that's, and the creation parallels Genesis very closely, but it's a realm where the spiritual things, spiritual realities, are not distanced or hidden in the same way that they are in our real fallen world. And so there is, they do say grace, they do talk before meals, they talk about this providential meaning that's in life, that's going to direct things, and that's going to cause good to win out over evil. That there's very much a religious sensibility, but it was his very desire not to come anywhere close to paganism that made him not make up a religion for Middle Earth, because he didn't believe that you should make up a religion in any way.
We're talking about Christian symbolism in the Lord of the Rings trilogy with Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Dr. Veith, someone also will object, saying, look, I know that the man was a Christian, but he wrote a book that's full of wizards and dragons and magic, and it's hard to square those two things.
Well, but it's not magic in any sense that we have magic. There's nothing occult in it. These are the beings that have powers, these are natural powers. There's no one selling their soul to the devil. There's no one doing anything that's perverse or occult. At least on the good side of the epic, this is a fantasy. It's imaginary, and it's not the difference between reality and fantasy is one that, of course, every sane person has to keep in mind. And in this fantasy world that he creates, there are, you know, wondrous things that happen, dragons and powers and various things like that, but they have nothing to do with the real with the occult that we have in the real world. In fact, it works against the occult, and things that are the dark side is specifically what is attacked. In other words, when you see, you know, magic in a book, you have to see what does it mean. Is it exalting the demonic, or is it attacking the demonic? And so, in terms of Tolkien's world, you know, it's a very wholesome, positive world, and there's nothing of the occult in it, except for realizing that evil is real and it has to be avoided and defeated.
One of the most fascinating characters that I don't think will regularly get recognized as a bit of Christian symbolism in this film is one of the little villains, and that is the Sméagol Gollum character that ends through the second movie and the third movie, figuring very prominently, of course, in the climax of the movie, plays a pivotal role without giving away the end. What is your assessment of this little character and the Christian symbolism that attends him?
Well, that's a great example of the spiritual struggle inside a person. He once was like a hobbit, but he found this ring, and his lust for the ring and desire for it, it turned him into something different. It turned him into a monster. And in what we've seen in Two Towers, he sometimes struggles against it. His hobbit nature, his good nature, hobbit nature sometimes comes out, but then the evil ring nature comes out. And we see his conflict inside. The old writers talked about the psychomachia, which means a spiritual war taking place in the human heart. And Gollum is his name, and that's what the ring has turned him into. That's the monster part of him. Sméagol is his old name when he was a normal, positive creature. And those two names and those two natures struggle against each other all the way through the epic.
There's a tremendous scene. I think we've talked about it before. And the amazing thing is, this is Academy Award material, but the creature is, at least as you see it on the screen, is entirely generated by a computer.
Mm-hmm.
There's this scene where Gollum and Sméagol are struggling within the same person.
Yeah.
And for a brief shining moment there, before circumstances change, the Gollum character is essentially kind of cast out.
Mm-hmm.
And this little character has a moment of redemption in which everything that had twisted him by the evil of the ring is now, it seems, to be gone.
Yeah.
Is this a little bit of a conversion story?
Well, it is. It is. But of course, he doesn't stay converted. But Frodo is often urged, just kill him. He's dangerous. He wants to steal the ring. He'll kill you all. He'll murder you for it. But Frodo wants to save Gollum. He sees what is happening. Of course, he can recognize and relate to Gollum because he sees these same things starting to happen to himself as the ring takes more and more control over him. But Gollum is worth saving. And Gollum, I think, becomes a picture of sort of human nature in a very profound way.
Dr. Veith, we only have about a minute and a half here before we have to go. people who read these books, or especially those who are going to watch the film as it's come out here in its final form, how can we use The Return of the King and the other films as an avenue for sharing the gospel with unbelievers?
Well, first of all, this is going to be huge, one of the biggest movies ever. And people, when they've been moved by a work of art, moved by a motion picture, they want to talk about it. And they will talk about it. And this is a work with meaning. And this is a great time to engage people in talking about this movie and then bringing them to reflect on the meaning that it has, which will enter right into the real return of the king that the Christians are awaiting, and the real cosmic battle that is part of our everyday lives.
Dr. Gene Edward V, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Oh, my pleasure.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is professor of English and the director of the Cronach Institute at Concordia University in Mequon, Wisconsin. He's culture editor for World Magazine and author of several books, including his latest, Loving God with All Your Mind. Now, you can check out the website for the Cronach Institute by going first to our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on Links with Regular Guests, scroll down, find Dr. Gene Edward Veith, and the Cronach Institute. Tomorrow on the program, the teachings of John Maxwell. Richard Howe of Midwest Christian Outreach will be our guest, and we'll be talking with Dr. Peter Scare of Concordia Theological Seminary about John the Baptist. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. Every story, this has come to me several times, not only in reading the Ring Trilogy, but in watching theater and movies. If you're looking carefully enough, you will realize that every story we tell is a feeble attempt to tell the story. In a lot of ways, the stories that we find in the movies of redemption of characters, the character arc, moving from ignorance to enlightenment, from evil to good, all of them are our own feeble attempt to talk about ourselves, our own dilemma, our own need for redemption. Then there's the story, the real story. The story that I think when we stand in heaven, we will finally realize that we've been trying to tell this story all along, but we haven't been telling it rightly. We've been telling it with ourselves as the center of the redemption rather than the Redeemer, Jesus Christ, our Savior, as the Redeemer and the center of redemption. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.